From Wisconsin Public Radio in La Crosse, this is Newsmakers. I'm John Gatto. Organic farming has grown substantially since the first industry standards were proposed in the 1970s. One of the larger organic conferences held nationally takes place this next week, Thursday, February 24th through Saturday, February 26th in La Crosse. The Midwest Organic and Sustainable Education Services, or MOSES, convention is expected to attract some 3,000 people to the La Crosse Center. In this part of Newsmakers, Wisconsin Public Radio's Steve Rysom reviews the conference agenda and the current state of the organic industry with two guests. Harriet Bihar is an organic inspector and educator. She operates an organic farm near Gays Mills. And Joe Pedretti, an organic education specialist with MOSES, who lives on a farm near Viroqua, and opens this conversation by introducing us to those attending the conference.
Attendees are a mix of a lot of farmers, obviously, that's our main target audience, but we also get a lot of consumer and advocates in the industry, and more now we're seeing more researchers and university staff show up at the conference as well.
Why the added interest? Can it just be momentum in the organic industry?
It is. It's the growth of the industry. We're seeing, of course, more and more farmers. There's more and more demand for organic products. So we're seeing more interest in new people getting started in organic. But we're also seeing a lot more interest in, again, like I mentioned, from the university. There's more and more research going on. And so those staff are coming to the conference to learn more, to make connections with farmers. We're also seeing a lot of consumers have strong interest in where their food comes from, and they're coming to the conference to learn more and also foster those connections. So it's much broader anymore than just farmers at the conference.
Even non-organic farmers will find things of interest here at our conference. They can learn how to do soil fertility or weed control without all those expensive inputs. There are organic farming methods that can be useful even to non-organic farmers.
And there's some called an organic university.
One of the things we like to do is the first day of the conference, which is the Thursday, the 24th, we put on a series of all-day intensive courses. The rest of the conference, you get 90-minute workshops, which is a good way to get introduced to concepts. But there was a strong demand for a much more intensive coursework. So from 10 till 5 on that Thursday, these conference goers will get immersed in a topic.
Do we have any sort of demographic data on when you see an organic farmer, most likely a male or female, at what age?
Well, yes, and there actually was a census of organic agriculture done from 2008, so we are a couple of years behind on that statistic. But the typical organic farmer is actually about 4 years younger than the average non-organic farmer. So if you farm organically, you will get younger. There's a lot more women involved. But of course, organic is across all types of farming. So we have organic dairy farmers, we have organic vegetable growers, we have, you know, organic apple growers. So it's all types, and it really depends a lot on what segment you're involved in. Obviously, there's more women involved in the vegetable side, and maybe less of involved perhaps in just cash grain.
The youth movement is very important here, and we've actually really accommodated that. At the conference this year, we have a tract called the Young Organic Stewards. And that's really what it's for. It's courses that are designed for those that are just getting started in organic agriculture, especially those in that 18 to 25 range. And some of these are not your typical, they don't have an agricultural background. We see a real strong interest in people coming in from urban environments and really looking at organic and farming and for the first time. And
is organics similar to perhaps what conventional farming was decades ago?
So you're talking maybe pre-World War II.
Sure.
As far as, well, organic is much more than that. Again, we are looking at systems, and we use new quote-unquote technologies. When we learn about the life cycle of an insect, we use that information to then manage that insect. But we also understand that complete control is basically impossible, and that we have to learn how to work with these systems rather than come in and say, well, we're going to kill all those insects. Because usually you're going to have unintended consequences, either like DDT did with the weakening of eagle's eggs, or you then kill off the beneficials. And so when you have such a negative effect on one part of the food web, it usually then has resonance further down and causes actually more problems down the line, because when you get rid of your beneficial insects, what happens is another insect, which maybe could have been held in check by those beneficials, then that one becomes a problem. And then you have to spray to kill the other one. And so it kind of is this treadmill that organic chooses not to be upon. It chooses instead to say, oh, if we do crop rotations, if we allow for habitat for the beneficials, if we grow certain types of plants that are more resistant to insect feeding, let's say alfalfas with like little hairs on their stems, so then the insects don't like to feed on them so much, then we don't have the problem. And then we don't need to spray.
How are operation costs on average? Maybe it's tough to say to give an organics wide gamut. Because I know that with conventional farmers, operation costs are really kind of brutal, at least in the last year or so. Organic, not so much? Or as you were saying, the costs come from perhaps hiring people as compared to spraying the crops?
It has been a hard period because sales did drop and prices did drop. However, let's say you're an organic dairy farmer. You may not be able to grow all the corn or small grains or hay that you need to feed your herd. Well, those see organic feeds are higher to purchase than conventional feeds. So it has been somewhat of a challenge for organic producers as well. But typically, because organic farmers don't use synthetic hormones and antibiotics on their herds, they have to be paying more attention to the animals and making sure that they don't get stressed out, that their health is maintained. So it's a lot more preventative. So typically, on an organic farm, you might have one person, let's say, per 60 or 80 cows, whereas on a conventional farm, you might have one person for 500.
This is Wisconsin Public Radio's Newsmakers. I'm Steve Rysom. We are talking with Joe Pedretti and Harriet Bihar. They are with the Midwest Organic and Sustainable Education Service, or MOSES, and the organization hosts the February 24th through the 26th Organic Farming Conference in La Crosse. Tell me about what the organization MOSES is all about.
Well, MOSES has been around since the mid-1990s, and we are an educational 501c3 nonprofit that promotes organic and sustainable education. That's what our name is, Midwest Organic Sustainable Education Service. And we work in the upper Midwest, Minnesota, Iowa, Wisconsin, Illinois, Michigan. Also, we have a website that is chock full of information. We have a lot of fact sheets that we have written, as well as we have links to other organizations. And that is MOSES Organic, MOSES Organic, all one word, .org. So we put on field days, we put on workshops, we put on the largest organic farming conference in North America.
With education being one of the words in MOSES, do consumers need a great deal of education to understand organic?
I think that it is a little confusing for consumers out there because there are so many labels in the marketplace. There's these eco labels and natural and grass-fed and fair trade. And what does this all mean? Organic is the only label that actually has the force of law behind it. The word organic is regulated by the USDA. There was a law passed in 1990. There were regulations written in 2002. So anytime you see the word organic in the marketplace, the consumer can have confidence that there's integrity behind that label. Whereas, unfortunately, the word natural has no meaning in law. Anybody can call basically anything natural. And the same with the fair trade and grass-fed, those all have voluntary standards. So there is no force of law behind it. I mean, people can follow them or they might not. So what we need the consumers is to understand that. Also, there is some abuse even of the word organic, usually like at farmers markets or at roadside stands where someone will think, well, I don't spray, and so therefore I am organic. But again, like I said, organic is much more than just the input side. It is actually a whole system of promoting health in the ecosystem. And so certified organic people, they have an annual inspection, and Joe and I have both experience being organic inspectors. So once a year, every organic farm has a visit from an organic inspector. They spend anywhere from 3 to 6 hours with the farmer, oversee what kind of plan and system they have in place, look at all the fields, look at the records that the farmer has to keep that show that they truly are promoting health in the ecosystem.
It's about providing a meaningful label. We want to build trust between consumers and farmers. And so when you see that USDA organic seal, that's what you get. You know that that farmer has been inspected, has followed certain rules. You know exactly what you're getting for your dollar.
How many years did it take for the organic industry to get the organic label? I get the impression it was a hard battle to fight.
I would say it started in the late 70s, and then we got the law in 1990. But it did take 12 years from when Congress wrote the law to when the USDA wrote the regulation. And we've been working on it ever since. The regulation is not static, and it's always getting improved.
Consumers have a voice when it comes to the organic standards. If there's something they think is missing, something that really needs addressing, the USDA listens. There is actually a board of producers, consumer advocates, retailers, and others that advises the USDA. And we've seen many changes. In fact, Harry and I had to print out a new version of the rules just today because there were some updates to the standards. So it's definitely a living document.
And the standards are getting stricter, not weaker.
In what way are they getting stricter?
Well,
give me one example.
The pasture regulation.
That's fairly new, right?
A year old, and actually the producers don't have to start meeting it until June of this year. They were given about 18 months from the printing to then having a full grazing system in place. There have been some additions to the list of approved products that are used in organic because some synthetics are allowed, like, for instance, baking soda. That is a synthetic, but we would like to have organic muffins, and so it's on the list. But that's how detailed the regulation is, down to things like that. Everything that you want to use, either on organic land or fed to organic livestock or in organic processed foods, has to be approved and put on the list if it's synthetic. If it's natural, it's just allowed. And, of course, there's the big three no-nos in organic, and that is no genetically modified ingredients or crops, no sewage sludge put on organic land, and no irradiation of any foods.
Is it tough or is it a little intimidating for some to get into the organic farming industry with all these restrictions?
Well, absolutely, and that's where our role comes in. It's really up to us to help guide interested people to the right course. How do you find information? How do you certify? How do you manage land when you don't spray? How do you manage a dairy herd when you can't use antibiotics? These are things that they have to learn new management skills for. And that's really our job. We've got the connections. We've worked with these organic growers. There's a lot of experience out there. Again, as Harriet's mentioned, you know, a lot of these organic farmers have been doing this 20, 30 years now. So there's a wealth of experience. There's lots of information coming out of the research land-grant universities now. So really our role is to be that hub so we can get this information out to interested farmers to help help them grow organic successfully.
What we also do is we have a mentoring program where we link up experienced organic farmers with people who are either transitioning to organic or even new to farming. So then they have someone who can help them through some of those hard spots. But with anything new, it's really not hard to be an organic farmer. What's hard is learning a new system. But once you learn, it really works pretty well. And in the 2008 organic census of organic production across the United States, 70% of all of the organic farmers in the United States actually have been organic more than 10 years. So these are people that have found a system that they really like, and they stick with it. I don't think that statistic would be that high if it wasn't a system that was both economically and ecologically sustainable for the farmer and the land.
If I was a conventional farmer or somebody starting out in the business, and I'd say, I want to switch over to organic farming, I believe in being in touch with nature, how are the profits?
Organic has shown itself to be a good economic choice for farmers. Again, but you have to understand, you have to have a different mindset that you need to know that you're going to be doing a little bit more management.
Right.
You're definitely going to be doing more paperwork. And actually, right here in Southwest Wisconsin, we are very strong, one of the strongest regions in the country in organic. And most of those farms average probably, 200 acres, 300 acres at the most for like a livestock or crop farm, not a vegetable farm, but those can be smaller. Whereas typically for a conventional farmer to make it, they would need to have 500 to 1,000 acres that they're working, which is takes more infrastructure. They have to have bigger tractors and you know, pay more taxes on that land and more input costs, basically, than the organic farmer. So, yes, it is more economically viable, and it allows the smaller farmer, which then when you have more farmers on the land, you have more vibrant rural communities. And we also strive to see that happen as part of that's part of the Moses mission statement, is to have thriving rural communities as well.
Over the last 2 years with the economy down, I mean, there was a time where the growth in organic flattened off, but it's actually rebounded very nicely. Most of the organic processors and marketers out there are looking for new growers now. So it's much more of a direct connection with consumers with organic now. You see, that's why you've seen the proliferation of farmers markets and direct to restaurant sales and direct to retail store, direct
to schools.
This growth is really open up a whole new set of opportunities for growers, and it doesn't have to necessarily just even be organic, but certainly the organic world is taking advantage of these new direct marketing opportunities.
This is Newsmakers on Wisconsin Public Radio. We are with Joe Pedretti from Moses, as well as Harriet Bihar, and they are part of the Midwest. I said Moses earlier. It's the Midwest Organic and Sustainable Education Service. They're hosting a 3-day organic farm conference that comes up later this month in La Crosse. How was 2008, the last part, 2009? I mean, it sounds like obviously you both survived. Was it tough going there for a while?
No, I'm a vegetable grower and I couldn't keep up with the demand.
And I'm mostly in transition, but what I generally saw previous to my work with Moses, I worked with some of the other co-ops that market organic milk and work in the organic industry. And what you saw is, again, that slowdown where they stopped bringing on new producers. But then again, here this last year, the market is taken off in a positive direction. So that really lifts everyone's boat. So whether it's a crop grower or if it's a livestock producer, there's definitely opportunities out there. And the prices held. That was the other thing that was interesting to see, despite the lack of growth. A lot of times what will happen in the conventional industry is those prices then bottom out and go below the cost of production. The organic industry really held tight to their organic pricing. So you didn't see a lot of that huge drop, 30, 40, 50% drop in pricing. It just didn't happen. So organic farmers weathered it, even though it was a tough time, pretty well. And there's definitely positive signs that we're heading in the other direction now.
We do have some challenges out there, and that would include the new deregulation of the genetically engineered alfalfa. We're very concerned about this.
Talk about it a little bit, Harriet, please.
Well, the background is it was released and allowed for planting about 4 years ago, and then the Center for Food Safety and Gertsen Farms went to court and got an injunction saying that there was no environmental impact statement on this novel life form that is now being planted. So they stopped the planting of the GE alfalfa. It actually, Monsanto then took that to the Supreme Court, and the lower court judgment to have that injunction on was upheld. Well, then the USDA in December, 2 days before Christmas, released a 2,400-page environmental impact statement, and they gave, they said there were three options with genetically modified alfalfa. That would be one, to not deregulate it, meaning not allow planting, or fully allow planting, or allow planting with certain management conditions to prevent this GMO, genetically modified. So the pollen, you know, alfalfa is, the pollen can go on the air and it also is spread widely by bees. So that would cause a lot of cross-pollination with the genetically modified trait into alfalfa that is not genetically modified. Well, after a month, the secretary decided, he outright said, I'm going to allow it to be planted. It's just a matter of whether it's going to be conditional with some management restrictions or just with no restrictions at all. And those management restrictions were put in place, or at least discussed, with some thought of the organic producers as well as non-genetically modified alfalfa people. There's a lot of alfalfa, actually, that is shipped overseas, and they don't want genetically modified alfalfa. So there was a lot of export people that didn't want to have it out there without some kind of protection against contamination. And so we were gratified to see that. And actually, the environmental impact statement, which truthfully I've not read the whole thing, but I did read parts of it, recognized that this genetically engineered alfalfa does offer a great risk to contamination. Well, in the end, the biotech industry won out, and the secretary has said that he will allow full planting of genetically engineered alfalfa with no restriction. And it was a very depressing day for us out there in the organic world because we don't really even know what that means. They did say that they would do some monitoring and see how far the contamination has gone. But to us, it's kind of like, once the fox is in the hen house, the hens are gone. So we're very concerned. We don't really know what's going to happen. Many of us have been writing the president and trying to get him to overturn this, and I'm sure there will be a lawsuit, again, based on the USDA's own environmental impact statement to try to stop this from being planted across the country. But there's many more things in the pipeline, and it's hard to keep fighting this battle, but we will. We are united and we are strong in our opposition. One of the problems with this genetically engineered alfalfa is the rules under which it's allowed for planting were written by basically the people in the biotech seed world. You have to prove, in order to not have it planted, that it's a pest to other plants, meaning that it will cause a disease or cause another plant to die. Well, most genetically modified plants don't do that. As far as, is there anything in there about cross-pollination and losing the purity of the genetic pool of the plants? No, that's not part of the law. So that's not even part of the regulation. So we really need to be working on that. It's very concerning to those of us who don't see the need for all of these genetically modified seeds. Most alfalfa is not currently sprayed with herbicide now, so why do we need to spray Roundup now on almost 70% of all of our agricultural land that's conventionally managed is sprayed with Roundup? And what's happening is now we're getting super weeds. So now they're going to need to be spraying more than just Roundup. They're going to be spraying more and more and more. And the promise of the genetically modified seeds that this would cause less use of toxic substances has not proven to be true. If anything, we are now using more.
Harriet Bihar of Gaze Mills and Joe Pedretti of Viroqua talking about the organic industry and the 22nd Annual Midwest Organic and Sustainable Education Services, or MOSES, convention being held at the La Crosse Center February 24th through the 26th. They spoke with WPR's Steve Rysom. And for this week, that's Newsmakers from Wisconsin Public Radio in La Crosse. I'm John Gatto. Our production team includes Steve Rysom, Maureen McCollum, Mary Meehan Strube, and our senior news editor and Newsmakers producer, John Davis. To hear this or other recent editions of Newsmakers, visit our website at wpr.org/lacrosse. In addition to Newsmakers, you'll find archived reports and special series produced by the La Crosse News Bureau, as well as network news from Wisconsin Public Radio and NPR. And if you'd like to comment on this week's Newsmakers or have a suggestion for future shows, you'll also find links to our producers and staff. That and more at our website, wpr.org/lacrosse.